Yes, welcome to another edition of Dead Set Legends for your Saturday, talking sport for the next 2 hours. Thanks for joining us and good morning to you, Jay and Joey.
Good morning, Emma. Hello, Joey.
Morning.
A beautiful day. The sun is shining. The birds are chirping. I love mornings like this because it's cricket grand final time in Melbourne and sort of being a bit of a cricketer back in a former life. Joey, I would be so excited for this time of year, but also so nervous. I don't know how you went on the morning of grand finals.
Couldn't eat breakfast.
I could not even have a spoon of muesli. I would feel so sort of sick and nervous in my tummy. I would be absolutely petrified for a big grand final morning. And I still took six for one game.
Here we go.
That's why he wanted to bring it up. Why do you want to bring up local cricket? Because you wanted to tell your six for story.
I jest. But good.
That's over the whole season, by the way. That's not in one match.
No, that was in one terrific spell, Emma. No, just kidding. Look, I wish all the cricketers out there well. They'll have their irons white. They would have cleaned their studs, Joey, and they'd be ready for a big day.
You know who else loves grand final day local cricket? It's all the other teams that haven't made the grand final because they get to go to the grand final, sit back, watch the boys, bit of sledging, and they can have a good day watching their mates who are in the actual grand final, who are nervous, who can't have a beer till the night. So to all the other boys and girls that are going to watch their friends play in the cricket grand finals, enjoy your beautiful Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it'd be great. How did you go, seriously, in mornings of grand? Like, could you do anything different?
I had the conversation. I think I've told this before. When I lived with Cozzy as my housemate, we're having breakfast together morning of grand final, and I was struggling to get the breakfast down. And I remember looking at Cozzy and said, "How's your breakfast going?" And he said, "Nah, rubbish." I said,
"No good."
And that was the first time we'd sort of spoken about how nervous we were. But I've been up pretty early this morning with the Grand Prix around the corner from my house. I don't understand why they were out on the track at about 7:15 this morning. I'm not sure who was doing practice laps at about that time. But little Noah, my 8-month-old, had his first experience of Grand Prix living in Albert Park. The fighter jet that came over the top of our house yesterday
scared
the living bejesus out of him. He just started bawling his eyes out.
And the porky,
he didn't know what it was, and he just did that face. You know, you can imagine a little 8-month-old's face, and then he just started losing it. He didn't know what was happening. So the poor kid got a fright. So my dog learned about that 5 years ago when he got his first fright, and Noah just had his experience. So it is a wonderful thing, those fighter jets, though. That is probably the highlight of Grand Prix weekend for me.
Yeah.
Well, the practice sessions were yesterday. Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton topping the timesheet there, which was to be expected. Yep. Although a good result for Daniel Ricciardo in the end, now driving for Renault, as we discussed last week, he recorded the 8th fastest time in yesterday's second session, which is a great result for him. I'm not sure if you heard the story about the seat change, though.
Yes.
So he had to stop halfway through, practice session yesterday to get the seat rejigged or something like that. And some of the commentary from some of the Renault engineers, I guess, was all about how the seat had to be changed because poor Daniel in his bits were a bit uncomfortable, apparently. They needed to make some adjustments for Daniel downstairs.
Wow, that is
Never heard that before.
Yeah.
Danny Ricciardo. We have to start calling
not Danny Ricciardo. Not sitting quite comfortably enough.
No. When you're taking up half your seat space, you're...
It might make you drive faster to finish quicker so you can jump out of the car.
Yeah. Nice one.
There you go. qualifying, of course, today, which is very important ahead of the big race tomorrow. Hey, coming up, 5 sleeps until we kick off the AFL season. We're all really excited. So is Channel 7's Hamish McLachlan. He's going to join us soon. But, boys, he has an unbelievable story about Kobe Bryant you have to hear to believe, right?
Yep. Can't wait.
Yeah. We'll have to ask him.
Because he interviewed him the other night, didn't he?
The Dead Set Legends, Triple M.
Hey, 5 sleeps until the season kicks off. But sadly, boys, there's a lot of injury and health news surrounding some of the game's key players. Let's start with Dylan Robertson.
Yeah, already a big year for St Kilda. They're under the kibosh down there at Seaford. But shocking news with Dylan Robertson. Remember, this is the guy that collapsed on the field against Geelong last year. Really worrying scenes. Had a defibrillator installed. And then, sure enough, at the weekend, he starts to feel a bit uneasy, a bit wonky. And now, Joey, devastatingly for him, really, because he'd been really good in the preseason. Dylan Robertson's going to be out for the whole year working with the medical team to try and find out what's causing these heart issues. It's just so disappointing.
It's really disappointing for Robbo. He's a terrific fella. He loves his footy. He's just a guy that loves it. He's got 3 young kids that he's supporting with his family, and it's just devastating for someone that something that's out of his control. It's not something he can do more rehabilitation, or there's other things that he can explore to try and help it. It's not an injury like that. So that's probably the hardest thing for Dylan to get his head around. Unfortunately, it's nothing that he can control. And it's shattering for not only him, but also for the football club, because he's one of the leaders and
he's really
a very popular
player.
He's a very popular guy. No, he's a very lovely fella, Robbo.
And of course, to replace him, the Saints have called in Sammy Rowe.
Yeah, boy.
A great fella.
He came in on the show.
Yeah. He's been training with Doncaster East and could play an immediate role there, given that Jake Carlisle's had back surgery as well. Nathan Brown suspended for round one. He could seriously play. Jono Marsh, the former Collingwood defender, coming into the Saints as well. But Paddy McCartan, what is it? 8 concussions in 5 years or thereabout. An innocuous blow at the weekend. How do you things sit for Paddy McCartan, Joey? Because it does really sound like he is weighing up whether he's going to continue playing football, because it looked like a light blow which concussed him most recently.
He's in a precarious situation. I know last year I think that he had... when he took some time away from football, they had discussions with his family and himself and the medicos to discuss how they want to go about it. I think reluctantly he ended up agreeing to wear a helmet and that they took some time off as well. So I know it is something they've been in discussion about before this incident. It's probably been a long time coming. I know his parents are really supportive of the medicos and trusting them, and they've been really good. But it is obviously a difficult decision for a young man, again, who loves his footy, just lives and breathes footy, loves it,
and
wants
Cozzy
to get out there and play. Cozzy as well. Yeah, who's it? You said?
Well, Cozzy's had the same concussion battle.
Same issues.
And now he's still affected. He told us last year.
Yeah, he still struggles with some head knocks. So you've got to consider your long-term future as well. It's just so hard when you're a young man living your dream to stay in the moment and wanting to play football, but trying to look at a bigger picture and understand the rest of your future. It's almost like a young person in the workforce having to think about their superannuation. You don't want to think, you think it's so far away. Exactly. You want the money now. And poor Paddy wants to play footy now. He wants to be out there, but he has to think of his long-term health. And
what would you say?
Tough
piece of job.
You know what? I don't think it's anyone else can have an opinion on this situation. I think it's only him, his family, and the medicos that know his situation. I don't think anyone else can have any opinion on what someone should do unless you know intimately their situation and how they're feeling.
This is a really awful one as well with Dale Morris. He's 36, tearing an ACL during the week at training. Those are hard to recover from anyway, especially though in the twilight of your career.
Probably the most popular and revered figure in the AFL playing ranks at the moment. He is such a much-loved figure there at the kennel. The Dogs are saying, Joey, that he could still come back and play next year. Whether he can pull off a Tyson Goldsack-style 24-week recovery and work a miracle for the end of the season if the Dogs are in the finals race.
Is Lars a possibility, Jay?
I think you speak to Dr. Peter Larkins and those guys, and they just say everyone has put a line through it. So I think you absolutely count that out. But that would be deflating for the Bulldogs playing group, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, of course it would be. Anytime you lose one of your stars, one of your leaders, it's deflating on the eve of the season.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, football clubs, unfortunately, become very good at just moving on. You know, players get injured. It's a fact of life and you have to move on. It's devastating for the player because they're the ones in rehab that have to go through it all. But football clubs are generally pretty good at moving on. Yeah. You feel for that player, no doubt, but you have to, as a professional unit, just move on and play with what you've got.
It's going to be tough for the Bulldogs. Marcus Adams left to go to Brisbane. Aaron Norton's playing centre forward, so they're going to be short down back in.
Joe Danaher, he's injured himself again, this time with a calf. It happened when someone kicked him in the back of the leg at training as well.
It means he's going to be missing their bookends, Essendon. Yeah. Your boys, Cale Hooker,
for the first
half. Joe Danaher now won't play for a year. It's going to be a tough start to the season.
You might have been onto something last week, Jay, when you said you were a bit worried about the Bombers.
And you put the moz on him.
I think you were a bit concerned. Now there is concern, but they did pretty well without Joe Danaher last year, the Bombers. They won 10 of their last 14 games, I think, last season without Joe Danaher. Hooker's a big loss as well, but you think with Joey, 5-6 weeks, another few weeks to get going. You're not looking till the second half of the season until we might see Joe Danaher anywhere near his best.
After round 8, Essendon was the number one pressure team, so that's going to be their trademark again. That the pressure around the ball. Jake Stringer, I think, has trained most minutes of any Essendon player over summer. So he's going to have to step up. The other big story of round one over the next few days, you're going to hear a lot about it, is Tom Lynch, whether he can play round one. He's had the big knee issues, the knee surgery last year. Joey, would you pull the trigger, play him in against Carlton Thursday night? Or does he need a run around in the VFL?
Oh, I don't think he needs a run around the VFL. But
just to build his confidence and get the touch? Or do you play him 60% game time against the Blues?
That's a good question. I'd throw him. I'd throw him straight in.
Would you?
Yeah, probably.
Pull the trigger. Why are we so obsessed with playing round
one,
Joey?
Because we've trained all summer. You don't want to then miss round one. You're pushed to get out there, but you're right. It's a long season ahead. If he's not ready, hold off. They really need him in the finals. That's when Tommy Lynch is going to earn his paycheck. But hopefully, he plays round one. We all want to see him on Thursday night.
Well, it's not long now. Fair enough that footy fans are itching for the season to get underway, with Carlton facing off against Richmond at the G on Thursday night to kick off proceedings. And Channel 7's Hamish McLachlan will be across it all and joins us this morning. Just how excited are you, mate?
Hey, Em. Morning to you, Joey J. Out of 10, probably sort of high nines. We're sort of revving harder by the time Thursday gets here. It's been a bit of a wait, but very exciting. It's just around the corner.
Hamish, Jay here, mate. I can't wait to hear your golden tones ring out. I mean, I've been enjoying your commentary of late. And I'm wondering, I mean, we've been talking about the fairy tale, Western Bulldogs, Richmond, West Coast last year. What is your gut telling you about the possibility of this season? Because Melbourne hasn't won a flag since 1964. I love that story. Do you think they can do it?
I think absolutely they can. I was doing some stuff with the Demons during the week, and Simon Goodwin's, you know, he's very bullish about the list. He's got a pretty healthy list. The JLT form hasn't been good, but I think you've got to put a line through the JLT form. In terms of fairy tales, though, I think it'd be fabulous for Melbourne, you know, to win their first since 64. And then you sort of look over the last couple of seasons. At the start of last year, the West Coast Eagles, for most, were finishing in the bottom four.
Yeah.
And the year before that, the Tigers finished 13th before they won their flag. Yeah, and then last year, Collingwood make the final, and within a minute and a half to go, they're leading the grand final before Dom Sheet rips their hearts out. They finished 13th. So it's like, what you think you know and what is going to happen is almost always these days two different things. You think you've got a bit of a handle on the game, and you know, then you realise that sport is completely unscripted drama and it makes a fool of you. So, yeah, I'd love the Demons to win. I think they've got a great list. But then you look outside of that and go, well, who could actually jump in? And finishing 13th last year was Western Bulldogs. Now, I said last year at the start of the year, you know, because the Tigers won from 13th, Collingwood could, and everyone laughed at the breakfast. And then they make the grand final. So, you know, whatever you say now, people may laugh at you, but it may come around to be that you're actually on the money. So, long-winded way of saying I'd love the Demons too, but I've got no idea.
What about then, Hamish, your thoughts on the announcement about the grand final staying as a daytime event? What are your thoughts? Obviously, you've got people in high places at the AFL. You've also got your broadcasters that have their view. But what about your own personal view in regards to a day, twilight or night grand final in the future?
I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I really like the way it works. Young kids can get up and go to the game and, you know, they're not exhausted. I'm a bit of a sleepy man, so by the time the grand final was bounced late in the afternoon, I'd be knackered. You'd be sort of so excited for the morning. But I was speaking to someone that's, as you say, high up in the AFL.
Someone who should know.
He said, you know, it's such a huge move. He might just leave it to someone else.
Yeah.
He obviously has a lot of pressure to tell everyone early what's going on. But the commission makes the decision, and they make it about now every year. And what happens is the media start to, you know, what are you doing? What are you going to do? Are you going to change it? You're going to become American? Do you need, you know, the big act to make it work? And I think they're making it year by year, but I think the tradition of where it is fabulous. Now wherever it is, whether it's twilight, night or day, it's going to be fantastic. And people say, oh, that twilight grand final between, you know, I think it was the Dogs and the Giants was maybe one of the first. But every prelim final is great. If that was played at, you know, 3:20 in the afternoon or twilight or at night, it's still going to be one of the best prelims. And that goes for the grand final as well. The thing that I hope the decision gets made, because it's the best time slot, not the best commercial slot. You know, you need to make that clear. And I think for now, 2:30 really works. Now, the other thing you need to remind yourself is, you know how they talk about tradition, 2:30? There's only one game each year played at 2:30 for the whole year.
Mm. Great point.
Hey, Hamish, we saw Robbo produce your top 50 during the week, had Nat Fyfe as the number one player in the game. I know Joey agrees. Who is your favourite player to call? Who really floats your boat when you're mid-commentary and they do something special? Who's your man?
Dustin's got an amazing ability to sort of do things to other players before he decides to do something with the ball, and that's always fun because he never really gets caught. So he's outstanding. I love when Jeremy Howe is floating about, just because you're getting ready to see him explode from the ground and sort of soar into the sky and do something. You always just know that if he's around, you've got to be on edge. Paddy Cripps is fun, just because I like seeing new stars emerge. Bontempelli's always fun. Koch, I've got a massive soft spot. I've got a bit of a man crush on Koch. I just like seeing.
You've listed like 11 players.
Well, you're hard, Hamish.
Joey, you're calling a lot of fun. Who do you get up off his feet?
Yeah, I do love all. I love all those big guns. I love Fife and Dangerfield and Martin, the guys that sort of break away from congestion. Something that I couldn't do. They're the ones that get me excited. The blokes that can just bust out of congestion, create something out of nothing. I love calling them.
The Dead Set Legends, Triple M.
Our special guest this morning is Hamish McLachlan from Channel 7. We mentioned it in the previous break. Before we move on to some other stuff, though, Ham, your brother, what do you think is his biggest challenge for 2019? Obviously, we've talked about the possibility of moving the grand final. That's not going to happen this year. But regarding the rest of the year, what do you see as his biggest challenge?
Sort of keeping out of the road of guys like Jay. You know, they're sort of... I think the growth of the AFLW needs to continue. You know, they're getting, like last night there were 5,000 in Canberra watching the GWS versus Geelong. I'm with Gil back at the farm in South Australia. It's sort of our last weekend before the footy starts. So we brought all the kids back, and all he does is check crowds and check all sort of numbers. So he was happy with that. But they've got to start paying it sometime. So that's, you know, how do you plan for 2020, 2021, et cetera, et cetera. The other part of it, I think, that is important is just to continue to have the development of the young kids in Australia, because this year and next year and the year after from an AFL perspective is fine. It's what happened in 5 and 10 years. Can we continue to grow? We've seen what's happened to the union and league's not at its healthiest at the moment. So I think that's his constant sort of agitation is, are we able to keep growing and being number one? Now, that's a very boring answer, but that's all he spends his time doing is how do we make sure in 5 and 10 and 15 years we own all the stadiums that we can and have all of the right management in place so that we're healthy and wealthy. Because in the 80s, the AFL or the VFL was on its knees back then, and there's no broadcast rights and no one really turning up. So it's just it's a constant sort of source to remain healthy.
Hamish, your other love, horse racing, and today on Channel 7, starting from midday, we have the All-Star Mile, first time we've ever having this event. Tell us a little bit about the All-Star Mile and your thoughts on it and how exciting is this for racing?
I'm Victorian racing sort of, Em, you know Sydney racing really well. The Everest sort of blew everyone away and has done a great job of capturing people's imagination. And this is Racing Victoria's sort of response in a way. And for those that don't know, there's 10 horses get nominated by popular vote. Then 4 wild cards get thrown in to make the richest 1,600 metre race on turf in the world. $5 million on offer. I think it's a really good concept. I probably would have reversed it. I would have had 10 horses on merit and 4 get voted in just so that you got more quality than we currently have. I'm really pleased the wild cards have sort of bolstered the quality of the field. I've got a bit of a, I spoke about my love of Trent Koch. I've got a massive soft spot for Mystic Journey, who's the Guineas winning filly, a 3-year-old. Lise A of the Cummingses is a really good mare. So I think you've got some quality, but I just was scared for a little bit that there was going to be a $5 million race for horses that perhaps weren't of the highest quality. So they've got there in the end. And I reckon Mystic Journey or Elisa will be winning, and Happy Clapper, as always, will be going very close. But I think Happy Clapper's better in Sydney. But Mystic Journey, Joe, I know you like having a couple of dollars each way. He's about $4.60, $1.80. So that's where I'll be doing my punting down.
We're speaking to Hamish McLachlan, Channel 7 commentary star. Hamish, you said, I had about 5 mates go to the intimate night with Kobe, the Mamba Mentality, which you brilliantly hosted from all reports.
Did you go, Joe? No, Jay? No.
It's too expensive for him, Dad.
Couldn't mortgage a house to get a ticket, to be honest. Hamish, but from all reports, it was outstanding. What was he like? Like, just away from the camera for a second, how did you engage with one of basketball's greatest ever? Was he a good bloke?
So I spent, Jay, on the Tuesday, I had an hour with him in his suite at Crown, and then had another half hour on the day before we did the hour on Wednesday night. I don't reckon I've ever been in the company of a guy that makes things easier. Federer is like that. And, when you do all the reading and the research, it comes across that he's a bit of an individual and he was really demanding. Now, he is all of those things, but he's also extraordinarily generous with his time and welcoming and, used my name a lot. When people use your name a lot...
Yep.
You know that they've remembered your name and taken the time. So he's one of those guys. He's huge on detail. We've got time for 2 quick stories on what sort of a bloke he is.
Yep.
So when he was 10, his old man, Joe, finished from the NBA, and he went over and played in Italy, and every summer they'd come back. He was playing in the under-10 Philadelphia League, played 30 matches that summer. This is Kobe. Didn't score a point in 30 matches. His old man at the end of it all put his arm around him and said, Kobe, if you score 60 in a match, or you score none for the season, I love you just as much. He goes, I know, Dad, but I want to score all the time. So he made a commitment to himself then as a 10-year-old. I'm going to train 6 days a week, 4 hours a day for the rest of my life, and I'm going to be one of the best in the world. I'm going to win a championship. Ended up winning 5. So then fast forward a little bit. In 2000, as a 17-year-old, he gets picked up. In 1997, he's playing game 5 against the Utah Jazz. They're leading 3-1 in the series. Late in the game, they're throwing the ball 4 times. He shoots 4 air balls. This is Kobe Bryant. 4 air balls. He flies back that night to California, going to where he's living. Around the corner is Palisades High School. He rings the janitor, who he's known for a long time, at 2 in the morning, says, can you open up the gym? Goes and shoots from the same 4 spots for the next 6 hours. And you can count for the rest of the career how many air balls he's had. But he's just a fanatical worker. He sets his alarm clock for 3:30 during his career, would train for 2.5 hours before breakfast, then take the kids to school, then go to team training. And, you know, still he gets up at 4 o'clock now. He's just one of those guys that...
Amazing.
He says, I'm not going to leave anything to chance. I will just make sure that I've done more work than anyone else. And, you know, when the young guys came to the Lakers, they'd all go out. He goes, yeah, I'll come out with you, no problem. Well, you've got to be with me in the gym at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, okay. He's just a huge worker, and he's very, very nice, very, very intelligent. He's, I don't know whether you know this, but he used to catch a chopper to training because the traffic was getting so bad, he was wasting an hour and a half. He's all about efficiency. So he had to get a chopper to train every day. And this is the sign of the freak show that he is.
Yeah.
So in the last year, he's thinking about life after basketball. He's going to become, form Kobe Inc., which is a business that invests in storytelling and other bits and pieces in the sports. He's starting to write a letter to basketball. So on his iPhone, in one helicopter trip, he writes a letter to Dear Basketball, and he writes, what it's meant to him, and, time's coming to an end. He then gets someone to animate it and turn it into a short film. Do you know that he won an Oscar for that short film called Dear Basketball, first year out of retirement? So he won 5 championships and an Oscar in 21 years.
Amazing. These high achievers.
He's just unbelievable.
High achievers.
I think Joey used to have to take a chopper out to Seaford. It was that far away. Yeah. You know what that's like.
They had to fill up twice to get to Seaford.
It's not that bad. Hamish, thank you so much for joining us. Some great storytelling, and we look forward to seeing you on the coverage today of the All-Star Mile, starting at midday from Flemington, and then, the big season opener on Thursday night. Good luck, mate.
Thanks, MC, Jason.
Thanks Hamish.
Yes, plenty of sport happening around Victoria this weekend. AFLW action, round 7, the final round of the home and away season. Plenty of games that will still determine who makes the finals. Last night, the Cats harmed their chances of making the finals, getting defeated by the Giants by 31 points. A couple of games today, Melbourne and Adelaide. The Demons are still a chance to make their first finals appearance, but they have to beat Adelaide and do it convincingly. And Fremantle and North Melbourne later on this afternoon, the winner of that game will definitely host a final. So some big games, and the Brisbane Lions got destiny in their own hands against Collingwood tomorrow. If the Lions win, they will also play finals at the expense of Geelong.
Who do you think is going to win it, Jay?
I think still Adelaide Crows are still the favourites.
Yep. Mm. And Erin Phillips, MVP?
Yes, absolutely. She's dominated this season. She is a superstar. NRL action started, Emma, on Thursday night. Our boys, the Storm, 22-12 victors over the Brisbane Broncos. And last night, a couple of games in Sydney. The Knights defeated Cronulla 14-8. And the South Sydney Rabbitohs upset the Sydney Roosters, who I'm sure are one of the premiership favourites, 26-16. Emma, who's your take? Who do you think will win the NRL this year?
You know what? I actually think Melbourne are now a really good shot. I mean, you've still got Cameron Smith in the fold after losing 2 of the big 3 in the last couple of years, with Cooper Cronk now at the Roosters and Billy Slater hanging up the boots for good at the end of last season. But the first 2 tries on Thursday night, scored by young guns, Jerome Hughes and Curtis Scott.
Yep.
They've got a lot of power and a lot of strength and a lot of creativity in some of their younger guys who have confidence. So I think the Storm could do it. I think a lot of people thought the Roosters would, be shoo-ins. But having been beaten by the Bunnies last night, it's unusual for a defending premier to lose their first game, I would have thought.
And is it right that, did I see on the Storm, did Cameron Smith, I know he's nearly 50 or whatever years old now, but he had 49 tackles the other night, or some amazing amount of tackles. If there's
he's unbelievable.
Doubt, Joey, how important these older guys are for rugby and footy clubs.
It's like the Storm are almost like the Hawthorn of the NRL. You just know with the coach Bellamy, it's like Clarkson. You just know they're going to be towards the top end of the ladder every year. They'll keep winning. Not a huge call by you, Emma, but we'll give you a bit of a medium call. Storm. I mean, Melbourne Storm's a pretty obvious one, but we'll give you that one.
Oh, come on. No, we are Melburnians, so it would be sacrilegious to say something
true.
Else.
That's true. The NBL Game 3 of the Grand Final series was played last night. I'm sure most of you didn't see it because it started at 10:30, but Perth Wildcats smacked Melbourne United by 29 points. So United are down 2-1 in the series. We'll chat to Corey Homicide Williams in the second hour to get an update on how United can get back into this series, Jay. It's amazing what home court advantage does in the basketball. A couple of A-League games played tonight. Melbourne Victory will take on the Brisbane Roar at Marvel Stadium, and Melbourne City face Sydney FC tomorrow. And a little bit of breaking news in the FIFA World Cup. FIFA exploring the option of now pushing the tournament out to 48 teams in the World Cup, and they're looking for neighbouring countries to help Qatar host the 2022 World Cup. So it's going to expand to 48 teams, and Qatar are going to have some neighbouring countries support them with this. What are your thoughts on
dogs
that?
Dogs breakfast since the start, this whole Qatar World Cup, fair to say, Joey. Where our Socceroos team is probably on the brink of, in terms of the top 32 teams.
Yep.
We're no certainty there. So 48 at least gives us a bit more.
It's the whole world 48. True, I mean, we don't even have to have qualifications and pools and all this. It's just go and play.
It seems like more money for FIFA, more games, more money, all that sort of stuff.
I don't think we'll be hosting games. I think maybe just more the neighbouring Asian countries.
Probably. And lastly, then, Victorian Bush Rangers in the cricket are through to the Shield final. They will host the final at the Junction Oval next week. So our Vic Bush Rangers also doing great things. So plenty happening in the sport in Melbourne, Jay.
And Joey and Em, did you catch Tiger Woods overnight? Nice to know that the great man is human. On the 17th, the Players' Championship, that amazing island hole or island-ish hole, took the iron and put it in the drink two shots in a row. So I think he had a quadruple bogey or something like that. But isn't it nice, Joey, when the big dogs stuff it up
we
as well?
We can all do it. Yeah, exactly right. It does make you feel a bit better.
The Dead Set Legends, Triple M.
Dead Set Legends with Joey J and Emma broadcasting from our South Melbourne studios this morning. We are so close to the Grand Prix track, we can actually hear qualifying. So looking forward to seeing all that action coming up in the next couple of days. But after 11, hey boys, we've got some news coming through that a former AFL player has been banned from a harness racing track somewhere in Australia after an incident last night. Jay, you've got the details of that. We'll go into them soon, but it's not pretty, is it?
No, and a decorated player, former Rising Star winner in some trouble, and it's currently blowing up the internet.
I believe he's been banned from all racetracks.
Yeah.
Maybe not even just the harness. It might be all racetracks in Australia. Fair enough. We'll find out the story later.
That'd be hard to do at a harness racing track, to be honest. I mean, you've got to do something pretty seriously wrong. Along with Corey Homicide Williams, as we've just mentioned, Melbourne being thrashed last night in the third game of the NBL Grand Final Series. He will tell us exactly what happened in Perth last night. And don't forget, if you've missed anything on Dead Set Legends, including our great chat with Hamish McLaughlin just a short time ago and his stories about Kobe Bryant, you can catch up with them on the Triple M app and the website. How good was Ham?
He was amazing. Kobe training at 4 a.m. He's so dedicated and obsessed. Joey, did you used to roll in the Seaford sort of, you know, still under the cover of the darkness, a few extras, little handballs, you
used
know?
To roll in the door at 4 a.m. But that is amazing. That's what makes those guys freaks. Like, he literally would get up at 3:30 in the morning and shoot a basketball.
Yeah. Fanatical.
Yeah, it shows. And as AFL players, we've got a long way to go. I'm not sure many football players would stay after 6 o'clock p.m. at a football club. They're pretty keen to get home these days. So it is a good reminder of what it takes to be an absolute all-time great.
Now, before we go any further into our program this morning, we have been following some breaking news this morning that happened at Gloucester Park last night, the harness racing track. During race 6, this is some audio from that race last night.
It's Rock and Roll, who's ahead away on the outside, and unbelievably, someone has thrown a shoe onto the track. Security, please grab this man. They lead the straight, 700 metres left to go. 58-1 for the first 800 metres. Unbelievable scenes here. That was outrageous.
What are the details there? Because it involves a former AFL player, boys.
Absolute crazy scenes, guys. It was former Fremantle GWS and Carlton midfielder Reece Palmer who threw both shoes onto the track. And watching the vision, it is so lucky that one of these horses or some of these horses and drivers didn't seriously injure themselves because, Joey, watching the vision, his shoe goes, or at least one of his shoes goes, between the horse's legs. Like, like he actually makes contact. It was a disgraceful thing to do.
If you can jump on triplem.com.au, you can see the vision because the shoe actually does land under the horses. So as you said, if a horse had got spooked and who knows what it could have done, it was so dangerous.
Yeah,
Reece Palmer, there's also vision of him, I think, being escorted by police and there was some grappling. It was, a bit forceful. Well, so he's in a lot of strife and it was dangerous and ridiculous and embarrassing.
We like to keep it straight for our listeners here, don't we, Emma? And it's fair to say in the vision that we've just watched, Reece Palmer looking a bit worse for wear. So he's obviously had a couple.
He's three sheets to the wind.
Potentially, exactly. With some, maybe even some Swan District's teammates. And yeah, he's sort of grappling with security and... What do you reckon, Emma? Should he ever be allowed into a racetrack again for the rest of his life?
I don't think so. I think that kind of behaviour, whether it be at a racetrack for thoroughbreds or harness racing, it doesn't matter. It's just inexcusable.
Yep.
It's stupid. It's not even funny. Like, I'm guessing he did it as a joke with his mates. That's just me trying to get into the mind of Reece Palmer as to why you would take off both your shoes and throw them onto a racetrack because there's no real conceivable idea as to why he would have done it otherwise.
Height of stupidity.
He threw it at the horses, really. It wasn't like it was on the racetrack. The horses were actually going past when he threw it. If you see the vision, he threw the shoe at the horses.
Yeah.
That or he's had a really bad night on the punt, but still, mate, like, come on, there's better ways to drown your sorrows than that.
So just quickly, Joey, if you are advising Reece Palmer today, what do you say he should do? Like, so if he's got to get a hold of his life, does he come out and wholeheartedly apologise for this? Like, if you're his dad... What are you saying to Reece Palmer this morning?
Well, there's obviously he's got some issues there to be doing things like that. So I don't know his situation. That's a hard one for me to answer, Jay. But
you need to apologise.
I certainly got to. Absolutely got to do. You've got to, and you've probably more importantly got to take a good hard look in the mirror at your life and what you're up to and where you're at. So Reece Palmer, a fair fall from grace for the, as you said, the one-time Rising Star winner.
Yep.
The Dead Set Legends, Triple M.
We are coming to you live from our South Melbourne studios. We are a stone's throw away from Albert Park and all of the Grand Prix action, which we can hear on our rooftop this morning. There's lots going on in the area. There you go. They're just having a cup of tea. Just, you know, getting ready. Hey, we are excited about Thursday night, the season opener between Carlton and Richmond. Boys, you have formulated some lists as to the things you're most looking forward to in 2019. Now, I'm very excited.
Yep.
If they're going to be great big calls, or we might even throw if that's not even a call. You know, things are just so obvious and so stupid. We like to support
each other. Come on, Jay-Z. What are you most looking forward to?
Go on. I can't wait for Thursday night, in particular Tom Lynch if he plays, because I think this man can win the Coleman medal. He led the competition in contested marks only a few years ago. He's been hidden away up there at Gold Coast. And Richmond has totally reshaped its forward line, its premiership winning forward line strategy to fit this man in, Joey, because they won it with a small forward line. They're throwing it out to accommodate this man, and they're going to be dominant in the air. And I think Tom Lynch, we will see the best of him. He will win the Coleman medal, and Damien Hardwick will be vindicated for throwing out a premiership blueprint and bringing in something else, something different, some height.
Okay, although we don't have all day. We've got to get through 5 each. I'll see your Richmond forward line and I'll up it. I can't wait to see Collingwood's forward line in full flight. Jamie Elliott is a superstar that's been forgotten about.
Yep.
Now you've got Stevenson in his second year roaming around and Jordan DeGoey in that forward line, who I think by the end of the year will be sitting alongside Dustin Martin, Fife and Dangerfield as one of the top five forward mids in the competition.
Oh, top five?
Oh, that's got to be a...
Thank you.
That's unbelievable.
This Collingwood forward line is going to be so much fun to watch with those three guys roaming the forward 50.
Does he play forward or mid?
He'll play forward. Definitely they can't forward. Get in the midfield. They've got too many mids. I'm looking forward to Collingwood's forward line.
All right. The next thing I'm looking forward to is Geelong playing a modern game plan. Now, we know the talent the Cats have got is excellent, but they haven't been playing with that elite forward pressure that the rest of the competition is doing. So Chris Scott has totally changed his ways. His whole game plan is going to be revolving around Dalhouse, Rowan, Tommy Atkins.
Joey,
applying that intent.
So five things you're most looking forward to about the season, you're most looking forward to Geelong's forward pressure.
Come on. It's got to be one of these.
They're going to finally...
Not even a call.
Oh, come on, JJ. You're looking forward to Geelong's pressure.
They're going to get with the program.
You know what I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to seeing Nat Fyfe, the best player in the comp, fully fit and in full flight, dominate the competition.
The number one
That's
player,
what gets people out of their
come
seats.
Come on,
not
get us
Geelong's
excited.
Forward pressure. Give us another one. What do you got?
Oh, Nat Fyfe's a good player, Jim. Predictable
I'd rather watch Nat Fyfe in full flight than Geelong tackle. Anyway, what's your next one?
Hey, on a serious note, guys, the vision we saw this week of Mad Jack Dore taking his first steps on an Ultra G treadmill, I know for the players and North Melbourne coaching staff who there saw it, it was genuinely very emotional. This is a guy who fell from the Balti Bridge a couple of months ago, was lucky enough to get away with his life, let alone be ever able to walk again. And now he's genuinely making a comeback to football. Might happen mid-season. When this guy pulls his boots back on and plays a competitive match, it will be the greatest story of the season, regardless who wins
that's
the flag.
That's a great call. That will be the highlight of the season when he plays. Yeah. I'll give you that. Is a beauty. Third thing I'm looking forward to is the first time a team is up by 3 points with a minute to go. They can't flood their defence. The commentary
call,
around
Jelly.
It. What happens? Does a team kick off? So that'll be fun. The first time there's a team up by 3 points with a minute to go. Watching the whole reaction to the crowd and whether the team kicks a goal. So looking forward to that.
That's a terrific one.
You can't just get back and flood the defence.
You can't.
I like you going that. Hey, I'm going to love seeing the space in the game this year. I know there's been a lot of criticism of the big decisions the AFL, the big calls the AFL has made, but I think giving space for the players, in particular our great midfielders, will be something that's going to get us jumping off our seats throughout the season. I love seeing as a kid Chris Judd explode out the front of the pack with a ball in hand. We're going to see Dangerfield, Cripps, et cetera, or Dylan Shiel.
Centre bounce goals coming out of the centre, kicking a goal from 55.
That's exciting. He used to do that sort of stuff.
Yes.
I know you're out in the wing.
I was out in the wing. No, sorry, couldn't get inside. I had Hayes, Dulcano, the other guys in there. Good one. You know, I love an underdog. So my fourth thing I'm looking forward to is when the Gold Coast Suns cause a massive upset and beat one of the top teams. It will happen at some point. No. They will defeat a team in the top eight. It'll be one of those great stories where Gold Coast come from nowhere. And I always love those the sides that down the bottom of the ladder that cause an upset.
They'll win less than three games this year. But do you want to
less than
that?
Yeah. So they'll win one or
two games. Do you reckon?
I think they'll win more than that. Yep.
No.
Two's not many.
Yeah, I'll read on that.
How many bottles of red are riding on the show, by the way? Are we going to tally on that?
And I'm in the hole after last
What's your next
year.
One, Joe?
Liam Ryan, the high-flying eagle, the premiership-winning hero, is the most excitable and watchable player in the AFL. That title used to be held by Nick Nat.
Cyril had it.
Good call. Yep. And Cyril as well. Now that is Liam Ryan.
Wow.
When any time this guy is around the ball, flies for the mark, he does something absolutely unbelievable. He could take mark of the century. What he did to win...
Mark of the century.
Mark of the century.
I'm telling you, Charlie.
That will be a highlight if he does that.
Hamish will be on edge for that one.
He probably could, though. He actually does.
He's grabbed to win the grab. That grab won West Coast.
If you see his highlight reel already, you're right. That's a very good call. No,
Liam
good
Ryan.
Call. You're looking forward to Liam Ryan. My last one. I'm looking forward to the great Gary Ablett proving the doubters wrong, kicking 50-plus goals at full forward for the Cats and becoming, like his old man, spending the last couple of years as a gun full forward pocket.
Like Lee Matthews. Could he be the next...
I think he could kick 50 goals easily this year, Gary Ablett, as a permanent forward.
Is he going
to throw the mull as well? Watching that.
Is he going
to
be good?
He doesn't need to tackle. That's why Dalhouse and Gary Rowan are now in the side, as you said. You're looking forward to them tackling. I'm looking forward to Gaz kicking 50-plus goals.
Well, three games down and two to go in the NBL Grand Final Series. Melbourne United trail the Perth Wildcats 2-1 after a heavy defeat last night. And our man on the ground, Corey Homicide Williams, joins us again to take us through last night's action. Where do we find you this morning, Homicide? Are you back in fair Melbourne or are you in the Wild West?
Oh, I am back in Melbourne. Good morning.
It's great to have you, Homicide. Caught the red eye again. Hey, I was snuggled up under my blanket on the couch watching the game last night. It was a great call by yourself. But tell me, what on earth happened in that first quarter, particularly between Chris Golding and our other man... who's our other guy? Casper Ware, please excuse me. They could not hit a bucket for that first 12 minutes, and it sucked all the life, all the momentum out of United's charge. It was over early.
Exactly. You cannot go 4 of 27 from 3-point line against the Wildcats in REC Arena and think you're going to win. And that was the game right there. If you really look at it, at the statistics, Tirico White, 31 points, 7 for 10 from the three.
He is hot.
Bryce Cotton, 16 points, 9 assists. Everybody else, a little bit bits and pieces, but nothing crazy. But you're 7 for 10 from the three. The point is, they hit shots, you didn't. Your key players did not hit shots, and they had wide open looks. Melbourne United just could not hit shots. And that's the game right there.
Now, Homicide, tell me then, they didn't hit shots. How much of it has got to do with the home court advantage? Because we're looking at the results, and we're talking about 30 to 40 point turnarounds from playing in Perth to playing in Melbourne. I understand home court factor and how it works, but is it really that big of a difference that Melbourne can win by 16 at home and then go over to Perth and get beaten by nearly 30? How big of a factor really is it, do you think, on a basketball court playing away from home?
Oh, I mean, look, home court advantage is huge. That's why in regular season you fight for home court advantage. You fight to finish first place. Because if you go all the way through, you know the biggest six man, your biggest teammate is your home court. Look at the energy. I mean, think about this. Game, like you said, game two, they lose by 18 points. Melbourne United looked extremely comfortable in Heinz Sense Arena, as they should. That's their home court. You train there every day. You shoot there every day. You're comfortable at home. And it shows. It's showing in this series.
We're speaking to Homicide Williams. Great call of Game 3 last night. Game 4 back in our house tomorrow, High Sense Arena. If you're the coach, Homicide, what do you do? Do you throw your arms around the boys? Do you give them a spray after last night? How would you address it with the team? Would you be stern or...
Just tell them to keep shooting.
I'm giving the spray.
Rocket.
This is a big game.
Mm.
This is, you want respect? You want that trophy again? No one's giving you anything. And guess what? You have to win in RAC Arena to have a chance to get it. Not even a chance to get it. So I would hang my hat on this if I'm them.
Mm.
Before Perth Wildcats, sorry to cut you off, right? The Perth Wildcats were up. They put the babies in the game. They put a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old in that game.
That's great.
And those kids were out there, and, you know, they are the future. Listen, and these are two guns. These are two young guns that will represent Australia under 19. As soon as the 19-year-old catches it, he goes to the basket and attempts to dunk on one of the players in Melbourne United. And the 17-year-old, when he caught it the first time, he knocks down a three on his first catch.
Yep.
That's how comfortable it is out there. That's disrespect for anybody to clear their bench and put the two kids who should never be in the game in the grand final in the game in their country.
Too nice, the Melbourne United. Too nice.
Too nice.
Watch out. Just on some NBA news as well, though, Homicide, reading yesterday that the thought that the LA Lakers may have considered trading LeBron James in February in the trade period, with some people taking the view that he's not as valuable as he once was. He's on the drift. What are your thoughts on that? It's making worldwide news at the moment. It's fair to say it's been a pretty awful season for the Lakers.
That's not happening. Yes. Don't even worry about that. That is just, I don't even know where that came from. What source leaked that? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's just not going anywhere.
What would you give up for Anthony Davis? I know the Lakers got the young players, Kuzma, Ingram, and the other one escapes me.
Lonzo Ball.
Would you trade that whole Lakers future for Anthony Davis?
Look, for me, Anthony Davis is a huge pickup. If they were to get him, they're going to have to give up a lot of pieces. That's just the reality of it. Now, the way I look at it is, Rich Paul is Anthony Davis' agent. Rich Paul is also LeBron's childhood friend and LeBron's agent. So you're going to have to take care of number one. Number one is LeBron. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do whatever it takes to get AD to get to LA. So whatever it takes, you got to get that done and then get some other legit pieces.
Spot on. Hey, Homicide, before we let you go, mate, we love chatting to you. What's your prediction now? United are down 2-1. Can they still win this championship, or do you think it's Perth's now?
Of course they could still win. They're going to win tomorrow. You have a week to figure it out. And then game five is any man's game.
Right, eight.
We'll go back to Perth for game five.
Yeah,
we're going back to Perth.
Scary back to Perth
back
again.
On the big bird, Homicide.
You're doing a bit of flying there, Homicide.
Get those
good
points up.
Good freaking fly points.
Yeah.
I'm getting them points. I'll go somewhere for free when this thing is over.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Thank you.
The Dead Set Legends, Triple M.
Yeah, Triple M's Dead Set Legends with Joey, Jay and Emma. Jay, the AFL head honchos and coaches had a meeting this week. We understand that things got pretty heated, particularly surrounding a discussion about the runners and the new restrictions imposed on them.
Emma did get a bit fiery as the coaches were tucking into their smashed avo with Gil McLaughlin, saying that we want more access to the runner to get them out there to speak to the players, pull our levers and our tactical masterstrokes. I reckon the coaches can give me a bit of a spell over this this one, Joey. Like, I want these guys off the field, and I want to see instinct from our superstars on the ground.
Yeah,
Joey.
It was going to be my give me a spell. To anyone that is a footy fan that believes the coaches and thinks that we need runners out on the ground, the only people that want the runners are the 18 coaches because they want control. That's their jobs. It's what they're trying to do. But for any football fan that wants to see a more entertaining game, we want more randomness. We want more instinctive football.
Chaos.
The reason why the game has got congested and defensive is because of too many coaches at the football clubs, too much influence, and they're having coaches having too much say. So as a football fan, we don't want the runners to have any influence. We want players to have a bit more random, just to play a bit more random.
Just to play, isn't it?
Not to be so structured. And if we have less structure, yeah, you get more random results. So I think we don't want the runners on the field at all. So if any of the fans that listen to the coach and say, oh, I can't believe we're getting rid of runners, give me a spell. We don't need runners on the field.
Joey, I would imagine there would have been some amusing runner interactions throughout your magnificent 287-game playing career. Having played under Ross Lyon, who could fire up at times, any sort of amusing runner stories you got for us?
Well, there's always stories with the runners, of their players answering back to the runner and sending messages back to the coach and all that sort of stuff. That used to happen. I never did that.
You
I was too scared.
But, yeah.
but the funniest story is sometimes runners take their job a little bit too seriously. All they're there to do is to run out and send a message. But this one in particular occasion, our runner had a bit of a tight calf. So our fitness guru and the coach and all the playing group actually set it up to make him do a fitness test the day before a game.
Oh, no, she's
so
joking.
We actually got him on the oval at Moorabbin. All the players went upstairs behind the glass. We filmed it with a camera, and the fitness guru got the runner to pretend he was in the dugout, get up, run through near the change gates, run out to the center circle, pretend to send a message, run back, got him again, sat him back down on the dugout, got him up again, run to the forward pocket, come back, and then one time he started to run and they pretended to do the old, no, come back. Going to turn around.
See,
and
was,
this runner,
his agility was
and
good.
This runner yeah. was dead set taking it seriously, thinking he's going to finish. We were all up watching this in absolute hysterics, thinking, come on, man, you're taking your job way too seriously. So sometimes the runners do take their jobs pretty seriously.
Did he work out that it was a piss take in the end? Or?
Only at the end of the season when we showed the vision. Said, mate, it was a stitch up. You didn't really need to do a fitness test. You just had a tight calf. You were fine. You can be easily replaced as a runner. All you can do is deliver a message. So the runners, they do take their job seriously, but I'd love to see less of them on the field and let the players play a bit more.
Did you ever get some stern feedback? Like, what was the message you would often receive from that runner via Ross?
Yeah.
Like, what did?
How would he deliver
it? In the contest, or
yeah.
You can't really remember. It's always a hard one. The runners are the ones that have to either work out, do they say exactly how the coach says the message, or do they sort of temper it a little bit and give you a diluted version? But I never had too many issues with the runners.
I wrote a story last year, Em, about the runners, and I was covering a game. It was Essendon and Fremantle for Triple M. I was sitting behind the bench, and I timed Tendai Mazungu, the Fremantle runner, on and off the field because there was a discussion at the time, like the runners are deliberately taking up space and being defensive and blocking, you know, get them off, etc. And so I timed Tendai Mazungu, and he spent 17 and a half minutes on the field of a 30-minute quarter, and I wrote this story, and I posted it back again up this week because we're obviously having the discussion, and fair to say that Tendai wasn't that happy with it. He sort of gave me a little bit of a clip on Twitter, said, are you sure that was June 28 or something, sort of making out vaguely that wasn't him, he wasn't there. But little does he remember that we actually had a bit of a chat that night. I was sitting behind the bench, and you can see on the AFL highlights that it's clearly him. So Tendai tried to wiggle out of it.
But they were having a bit too much influence. I mean, even recently, late in my career, I remember before a game, I was in the match committee room before a game with a coach just working out some strategy. If I was getting tagged, what are some options I had and some bits and pieces? And I looked over my shoulder and the runner was listening in on the conversation because he thought
the opposition runner.
Our own runner, but he thought he needed to know what all the tactics were for his job. And it felt like saying, well, mate, you just got to deliver whatever message you get told from the coach. You don't necessarily need to know what my options are if I'm getting tagged and these sorts of things. So I think they were having probably a bit too much influence in regards to tactics and knowing a bit too much about the game. So I'm happy that they've got less influence.
Do you ever know of any situation where a runner was deliberately blocking space?
Not at St Kilda.
There was
talk, and I'm not sure where that was. I don't necessarily believe that Nick Maxwell was doing that deliberately. I don't think so, but it could look like that if a runner was standing in a position waiting to send a message to a player. You do need to wait somewhere on the field.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think clubs would have deliberately used that as a tactic.
Just,
no, I don't.
Just coincidence then that he happened to be standing in the same spot every time at certain. He's a great man, Nicky Maxwell.
Well, 17 minutes out of 30. That is just, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Too long.
Just have to look at those stats.
One knows what she's talking about.
Blow my own trumpet for a little second.
One thinks he does.
Wow.
And the other has no idea.
I felt a bit left out.
It's the Dead Set Legend Best Bets.
Yeah, we'll get into a bit of racing because a brand new race makes its debut at Flemington today. The $5 million All-Star Mile. It has been quite the discussion in racing circles as to whether people like the concept or not, but today we'll see it actually come into fruition.
Do we like the concept? Are you a fan? Do you like it, Em?
I actually agree entirely with what Hamish McLaughlin said earlier in the program, which was he thought that 4 of the 14 horses should have been publicly voted and the other 10 that make up the rest of the field should have been discretionary additions by Racing
fast
Victoria.
Yeah, 10
fast ones and 4 slow ones. Because at the moment you do look at the balance of the field and it is still a great field, but I wouldn't say it's not cracking.
It's not an Everest. If we're trying to compare this to Sydney's form of the Everest, where it is the best sprinters that we have, you're right. This isn't quite the best of the milers that we have in our country. So I think something does need to be just tinkered with. As we said, we like the concept. It's a first year. We've got to try things, Jay. We spoke about AFLX and all these other things. Give it a shot.
Innovation.
But I think we can find the balance between voting for horses, but also getting the very best horses in the field.
Like, you've got Elise in there who was, you know, has been the favourite for the past couple of weeks. She was $3 during the week, but now has been on the drift. Then you've got Tasmanian Star, as Hamish was saying, Mystic Journey, who's received a lot of support. But then some of the other ones who were voted in by the public, they received 120,000 votes in the end. Urban Ruler, that's complete people power in terms of, you know, how much prize money he's won and, you know, gives every man his chance, but over the hundreds in markets. Balf's Choice, a Seymour Cup winner, going to have to improve astronomically to have an impact today. And then horses like Mr. Moneybags, who has a huge group of owners. They've obviously gotten on the laptops and made sure his vote counted, and same with Man of His Word as well.
But that's the catch, Em. You get 90,000 for running last. So you just want your horse in the field, and that's better than winning some of the races midweek and anyway. So that's why it's a bit skewed.
Well, Em, we know we try and give a best bet each week, and we've got a little competition happening here, and you're currently winning 480. You're 280 clear of myself and Joey. So we got a bit of ground to make up, Joey, but who is going to give the listeners out there some gold? Who's a winner today?
Okay. I'm going to stick with the All-Star Mile because it is the feature race of the day. It's the one we're all excited about. The Old War Horse, over $6 million in prize money, second to Winx Last Start, Happy Clapper at about 480. We could power play at, you know, maybe 550 if we wanted to be cheeky.
I liked Happy Clapper as well, but I didn't want to do the same as Emma. So I fair, but I've got another one that I'm really keen on. Race 2 today at Flemington at 120. It's called Write Your Name, number 5.
Yep.
It's got good form. There's a $2 favourite in the race. It's had 2 starts for 2 wins, but I'm just concerned about it stepping up in class to the big smoke at Flemington. Write Your Name, proven. It was 3-4 wide last start. Hung on. Gets a better run today. Archie Alexander Train. It's about $6.50, and I'm just having 100 straight on the nose so I can go straight to the top of the leaderboard. Oh. Write Your Name, race 2, number 5.
You normally play it a little bit safer than that, Joey, but the $6, that's got my attention. Mm-hmm. And of course, I always have, I back Pikey, William Pike, the West Australian jockey at Ascot in the last. He got suspended.
Mate! Emma,
he came to the big smoke and he went.
He was a bit too eager. Yeah, he got a bit carried away.
He blew his chance and now he's been suspended for 8 meetings. So you can't back him in the last today.
So I'm going to stand by Pikey. I stand united by Pikey. I'm going to sit it out this week. And I look forward to the magician, the wizard, doing his work next week.
So you're not having a play?
No, I'm united with the wizard.
So you're not going to have anything? You're just going to omit your bet this week?
My man got suspended and I insisted. Solidarity.
Can't lose with the money in your pocket.
Exactly. I'm still beating Joey. So that's fine.
We're fighting the fake
news. The Dead Set Legends.
Give me a spell.
Give me a spell.
Give me a spell.
Phony. Fake.
Guys, it is Grand Prix weekend. As we know, very exciting time in Melbourne. There's a real sort of buzz and vibe in the air. But I've got some real concerns for our man, Daniel Ricciardo, and particularly his engineering or his support team, because I was absolutely staggered to find out yesterday that he had some seatbelt problems. Emma, as you touched on at the start of the show, there was some issues with his seatbelt so he couldn't clip it in, and that delayed his practice. This time. Now, Joey, when you're out there on a racetrack and you're going to zoom around at 300 kilometres an hour, if there's one thing that you want working pretty much touch well faultlessly. I reckon it's your seatbelt.
It's up there with the steering wheel and the wheels not falling off.
And the brakes. Yeah.
And the brakes. Yeah,
pretty
the
bloody crucial.
That is important. Engineer,
whoever didn't have the seatbelt issue sorted for our man Daniel Ricciardi, Ricciardo, give me a bloody spell.
Oh, yeah.
Get that
just
sorted.
Give me a spell.
I read in the Herald Sun that one of the engineers was like belting his chair with a hammer or something to get the seatbelt working properly. Fair dinkum, you blokes. You get paid zillions. Work out the seatbelt, man. Emma.
Oh. Mine's also in the Grand Prix vein. I'm going to dance around this one a little bit because it's sensitive, but someone very close to me is a hairdresser. And they got a call during the week that someone who is in town for the Grand Prix needed
big name, is it?
Fairly big name.
Okay.
Wanted to come into the salon to get some bits and bobs done on their head. And apparently they
got a sharp for the Grand Prix.
Of course you do. In the end, they've rejected her services because of her appearance.
What?
Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
But nothing to do with her talent as a hairdresser. It was to do with her appearance.
Okay. To do with her appearance. Give me a bloody big spell for that one. It has shocked me. It has rocked us. But we'll move on. We'll move forward.
Makeup artist or a hairdresser. She might have been too tall or something like that.
I'm not sure. It's got me stay left crazy.
I'll eat
in the whispers column. In the whispers in the paper. There's a time for...
Oh.
The Dead Set Legend of the Week.
But a champion becomes a legend.
Sorry, Rosie, caught you by surprise there. Yeah. My Dead Set Legend is just a little Dead Set Legend. So this little young fella who was at the track yesterday talking about his favourite driver. I think you just had a bit of trouble, Jay, but let's listen to this young man's...
Again?
Let's have a listen to this young man's who his favourite driver is.
Who's your favourite driver?
Danny Avocado.
Oh,
bit of Danny Avocado. Hey, that's who he is. Bit of Danny Avocado.
Yeah.
I like try that. What a little champ.
Danny Avocado.
You were a bit like that just before, trying to say Daniel Ricciardo, but Daniel Avocado. So we wish Daniel Avocado all the best in this Grand Prix. I'm unlikely that he can win it, but we always cheer on our Aussie, so good luck.
Hey, guys, guess what? Footy's back Thursday, which means when we're back on air from 10 o'clock next Saturday, we are going to be talking round one, talking about the games that have been and the ones coming up. It's going to be exciting. Any quick first round predictions you want to throw in there before we leave? Our lovely listeners.
I reckon the Pies could give the Cats a bit of a touch-up on Friday night,
Joey. I think Collingwood going to win that, and I can see the script going on Thursday night. It'll be close at halftime. Carlton will be around the mark, in with a sniff, and then the Tigers will just be too good, win by about 30 points.
I reckon the Bombers could be on trouble on Sunday. I reckon GWS could win at home too.
We'll discuss that one on Saturday.
Yeah, we will. Okay. If you want to catch up on anything of today's program, head to the app or triplem.com.au. We'll see you from 10 o'clock next Saturday.
Hang on, the cars are on the track.
Oh, thanks, Rosie.
Oh, they're on the telly, but we can't hear them yet. I get excited. It's like they're just down the road. Damn.